92, we present the fabulous What's the Scenario remix. Whereas there are seven MCs, six which are in physical form, one which is in spiritual essence, and he goes by the name of
Welcome to another Scenario Remix edition. We're back with one of our great interview sections. We haven't had one in a while. People have been, they just been trashing us. They saying we got so many other shows that we have turned into the, somebody tweeted us and said we are the outcast now of, we got the Dungeon Family now where everybody else coming out with tracks.
Hey, if we outcast, who are you? Which one are you? You're definitely big boy. Definitely.
You think so?
Man, you too. You're the blackest dude I know, man. Yeah, big boy is way blacker than Dre.
Yeah, but you got some big boy
and
tendencies
Dre's
too.
Taller than big boy too.
That's true. Okay, well then there you go. That's it. That's out. That's it.
You keep it. I guarantee you, I've worn more colorful pants in my life than you have.
Probably. Yeah. Probably.
I gotta be Dre. Yeah. This is that nothing to do with lyricism. But yeah. You've kept it closer to the hood than me. That's all.
That's true. That's very true. That's very true.
I'm cool, y'all. I like that. I think you are definitely Dre.
I'm happy, man. I'm happy that we was able to have this one today, man, because we got to bring the dope thing about the quarantine so far has been that's given us the opportunity to quarantine. I'm using that very loosely because we all know that's over. But COVID is not, however. But wherever we're at. Give us a chance to get an opportunity to rap with a lot of folks that we might not have under usual circumstances, made it easier. Today is one of them absolute cases because we get a man who's worn many hats in my life. And I'm going to say, one of the people that more easily has cursed me out multiple times through my adulthood, and I think probably 3% of
all out of love.
So, my man, my chapter brother, my old head, there it is. Rob Weaver, live from Dallas, Texas today. We brought the whole thing full circle. Rob, what's up, bro?
What's going on, man? I appreciate y'all having me out here. I've been admiring y'all from afar, doing your thing individually and collectively. I think it's an awesome thing that y'all are doing. Y'all keep pushing, and I appreciate being here and giving the opportunity to talk about what I got going on.
Hey, so real quick, first of all, I appreciate that most definitely, and you definitely got some things talking about that we need to go on. But I had two things I got to talk about up front. I'm going to tell a story about one of the first interactions I ever had with Rob, and let it kind of go from there. So 2003-ish, I just was getting to Mizzou, 2003, 2004-ish, just getting to Mizzou, getting settled in, and it was around the time that I got interested in capital. So I had to figure out how to work that whole thing out, how to make that happen, and Rob came around and said, so I guess somebody told you and said something like, yeah, this was a catch. I think he interested or whatever. Rob looked at me and said, oh, this is where we're going? Glad I'm leaving. that was how I realized that, all right, cool, great. This is going to be one of my good friends for the rest of my life. There we go.
Look, man, if Rob doesn't care about anybody, he doesn't kick on the ball. And kicking the ball is the first time he sees you. Like, if I walk up to you and I'm like, hey, man, how you been doing? How's your family? Are things well? I do not really mess with you. But if I walk up to you and be like, oh, my God, you look like you gained, like, 70 pounds. What's wrong with you? That means I love you. I care about you wholeheartedly.
The people that you care about the most in life, I believe, wholeheartedly, you should talk to the most recklessly. I mean, that's the way that I live my life, and I want everybody to realize that when I go, I want them to know that I would be sitting there roasting me if that was me in other situations. I also realized that when we was putting this together, man, the two of you also had a little bit of history there too from y'all days of bringing the people together up I-55, connecting the streets, man. So y'all got a little history too.
Man. I mean, these cats, I felt like they were basically our counterpart in another city. It was like kind of like I'm trying to think of like a way to compare it.
It'd be like Cash Money.
No. It's like mafia families where it's like you got the Cleveland family, the Chicago family. It's like, do they have loose affiliations? Like, we got to go rob, we got a deal going on. Well, you know, I'm a deal with the Chicago family, you know, but we all connected through, you know, all these different routes, and this person connected to this person. You got the Mizzou connection, Chicago, all that stuff, you know, at the same time, man. And plus, we changed both our cities, man, like tremendously. And they'll never be the same without us. Like, real talk.
I do agree with that, Daryl. I think we set a standard. I know when we were in the promotions game, we were really strict as to the kind of feel and vibe. Like, we were still the same cats, but we at least had to make sure you understood that you were going to, one, be safe in the environment that you were coming to party with us, right? Two, you had to respect the places that we were in just as much as we respected them. We were really, really shutting down the idea that this place didn't belong to us. We wanted to make it feel like this club was our own club, right? And three, it was actually making an environment that even if you didn't come from college, even if you didn't come from like being in the to-do circles, you were still just as welcome. And I remember being at the I had to fire a door guy at one of our parties because, I mean, we had a lot of good-looking women coming to our parties in Chicago. And there was this sister who walked up to the door, and she was heavy set. But you could tell she spent time taking care of herself that day because she wanted to come to this event, right? You could tell she took time from the shoes she was wearing, yada, yada. And our door guy kind of gave her this vibe that she wasn't welcome.
Wow.
Just because she had to have she was a little bit heavier than most. And we got rid of them right there on the spot. You got to go. This ain't the vibe we're trying to put out. And I felt like we were all trying to make even though we were in two different cities, we were trying to make a very inclusive environment for everybody. But at the same time, you got to follow the rules. So if your shoes don't make no sound, don't come to my party, bro. Which is a little funny because I don't go to no parties in shoes that make sound now. That I'm always in a pair of ones or something like that.
But that's because you feel like you're above it now. You're like, I put in my square toe shoes for a long time.
Absolutely. I feel like I should be able to come in that yoga in some hoop shorts and a t-shirt like I'm headed to somebody's house after this. Like, this is, it's definitely different now.
Well, and then seeing that goes back and like that image and like kind of having that taste set and like, you know, vibe to the whole thing, that even goes back to, for you, it goes back to the college days. You know what I mean? Because y'all were the first cats I ever seen that had a liquor promoter themed entire event at college. I was just like, and you look at it now and it's kind of crazy, but then you think about it and it's like, well, hell, at that time, Hypnotic was the biggest thing in the streets.
Bro, Hypnotic, this is how we know we didn't, I wish we can go back to those times where Hypnotic and Hennessy was impressive to somebody, like, oh my God, he got me an Incredible Hulk. Be like, what? Oh, now I wish I could get
him. If somebody gives me one of those now, I know that they're tired of me living because it's not going to be too long in the tooth for me.
No, bring this antifreeze out of here. Like, don't pour this in my radiator, please. But, yeah, man, we've always tried to set new standards. But more importantly, and it kind of ties into what we're doing now, is that we've always had this expectation of ourselves that we were better than the world told us that we were. Right, we've always had this expectation of ourselves that we can be seamlessly shift in and out of certain environments, but that's also part of what I'm trying to reject in what we're doing with Black as Fuck is that I don't have to code switch for you to see my brilliance, right? I shouldn't have to code switch for you to see my brilliance. And I'll just keep talking about it. And so that's, you know, just to get into the thing, that's the kind of where Black as Fuck is coming from is, I know you guys have had the same experience, right? The other cultures or whoever may be, they get comfortable with you. They get super comfortable with you because they feel like you're, quote, different. Now, we all know we ain't no different than the cats who on page
no
of Kings
different.
Out. Right? We all know that we ain't no different than the cats who then got caught up doing something for the first time. We probably, all of us probably did those same first time things. We just didn't get caught. Right? We all are conscious of this, but other people see us and they think we're actually different. And so I had this idea one day. I'm like, dog, I'm Black as Fuck as anybody else. I'm like, it's there's nothing that's less Black about me. I have just become very adept at making you comfortable. And I'm I'm kind of tired of it.
So I'm glad that you go into that, man, because I like the concept of, you know, right now it feels like there's a lot of concepts that are out there where you're saying one thing and people are turning it into a completely different thing. I mean, it's nothing new. It's just hitting a plateau, I think, right now, where basically you can use words, describe what they mean, put them out there, and people still are going to listen to that, look you right in the face, and decide it means something else. So, yep. You know, with Black as Fuck, I love how two things. Number one, I can see it in the shirt right here. You stylize it in a way where it's very clear what you're saying, but at the same time, it still is something that you can take anywhere and make people have to accept it, and they can't reject it based on the way that it's displayed.
You don't like these letters? You don't like all these letters scrambled up on my chest? What are you going to do?
Can't watch Wheel of Fortune and then reject that shirt. It just doesn't work that way. But the thing I really like about it, though, is how it's basically is like fill in the blank is Black as Fuck. You know what I'm saying? So, like, talk to me a little bit about, you know, how you got to that concept and just how many different ways you really think that message can get driven.
So I'm a parent, right? And I think the most significant charges of being a parent is that you have to constantly be better in yourself so that you can pour into somebody else younger, right? And so as culturally aware as I am, as conscious as I am about what we've done, the more I start biting off this apple of Blackness, I realize I'm insufficient. I don't have enough of my own understanding about our culture for me to then impart that greatness into my children, right? So I'm out here thinking about, every day I'm looking at, like, what's Black today? What's Black today? And I'll find something Black. I'm like, I never knew that was Black. You know, I never knew that was Black at all. And so I'm like, man, you know, the Kentucky Derby is Black as Fuck.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, people don't know that. People don't know that.
We're Black.
The first jockeys were Black.
The first winner of the Kentucky Derby was Black as Fuck. And more importantly, 12 out of the 15 of those racers were Black. 12 out of 15. So not only were we involved in the sport, but we were the sport of the Kentucky Derby, right? But who knows that? Now, we know about the singular instances of it, right? We know about, all them big hats got to come from Black churches. Where else would you get them from, right? So we know about all those aspects of it, but we didn't understand how critical we were to that thing becoming what it is today. And truth be told, that's a lot of our experience in this world because we were doing so much work behind the scenes, right? So who was raising the horses? It was Black hands in the fields raising the horses. Who had the best relationship with the horses? Who understood the horses the best in that? It was the people who were dealing with them hours and hours and hours upon hours every day. We should have been recognized as the best in that, but we, like any other history that happens in America, gets kind of to the winners go to spoils, right? And so that's the kind of how history is written. And I'm like, we have to start changing that narrative. And as I start exploring this for my own children, I'm like, well, other people need to hear about this too, because I'm pretty sure that nobody knows about, like, if you say Jerry Lawson, unless you're just a video game, like, the god, you say Jerry Lawson, and I wouldn't even say video game god. I would almost argue that most of the folks over in FaZe Clan doing electronic gaming, right? They have no clue who Jerry Lawson is. But yeah. Jerry Lawson was the Black man who developed the cartridge for a gaming system. So, you know, and think about the profitability that happened as a result of you being able to exchange cartridges versus having to buy a new GIS system with games being loaded. But how many times have we taught about Jerry Lawson? How many times have we been taught about Steve Jobs?
Yeah.
Right. So and what I've realized is I tell people all this time that the older you get, the Blacker you get, because this country will make, right. It will make you get more committed to who you are, because you will, at some point you become, after all those years and years and years of saying who I am wasn't good enough, you start rejecting it. You said, you know what, I'm just as good as anybody else out here. So you get Blacker and Blacker the older you get. And what I wanted to do was, as I start going down this whole path of exploration, and Black as Fuck is a very much in evolution at all times, right? It goes from being a T-shirt thing to a a podcast thing to a blog thing, but it's really just the aggregation of all this experience that I'm trying to learn as much as I can about myself and our people so that I can give a better head start to my children and how confident they are about their blackness. Because a lot of us became confident in our blackness after the fact, right? After we had already been socialized to believe a certain thing about black communities. And then we had to go out there and actually find out the truth.
And I think that's a good point. That's a question actually I'd ask both of y'all, because I think that one thing that is definitely that education piece, you know, that's a huge part of it. And that's something that I can recall, you know, talking about around the time back a few months ago when Juneteenth really took on its prevalence at a much higher profile level than ever before. And, you know, it was a piece of things where I saw a lot of people having to reckon with the fact that it just wasn't something that they were educated on, black and white alike, you know, but with it being the level of importance for it and it being something that was kind of glossed over, to your point about to the victors go to spoils. But I know that both of you being parents and having kids that are at different points in their education, but are, you know, you're having to take on that responsibility of guiding that and putting things in play. How important and how much room do you have to be able to institute some of the things that you care about and you know should be in the curriculum that maybe you're not seeing, but now you're having an opportunity to put those things in front of them in a different way?
I would say my experience, my desire to be more conscious of my blackness is, and more proud of my blackness is that is also a direct reflection of the fact that I made a choice to put my son and my daughter in a school environment where they are one of, right? So in doing that and making that choice, I also said to myself, if we're going to let this happen, if we're going to let this happen, the responsibility of them being well-formed and as to who they are as black people now totally falls on my shoulders. Because I can't send you to this lily-white environment and then ask you to come out, like Sojourner Truth. It's just not going to happen, right? We are all functions of our environment. So it became my responsibility. It also became my desire to put a shield around my children, right? Because undoubtedly, I just heard a story today from a friend who said her white friend called her and said, "You won't believe this. We had a guy over at the house, and I'm about to leave my husband," is what she really said. "I'm leaving him because the 2-year-old daughter went up to the Mexican guy who was cutting the lawn and called him a nigger."
Oh.
Right? 2-year-old daughter, Mexican guy, nigger. That's all learned behavior, right? And so I'm like, when I said, you know, I was going to all of the private school meetings and my hands folded because I ain't hearing none of this stuff. I'm over here like, yeah, man, I came out of public school in St. Louis. He'll be all right. He's going to have to take some shots. You know, it is what it is, which is a ridiculous idea in itself, right? Especially when you talk about moving the needle forward. Why would my son have to run from cops like I had to when I was young? Like, one, you ain't even going to be in them neighborhoods, bro. That's just the reality of it. Like, you probably ain't going to live in that experience. I can't be teaching my children for that experience. However, I also have to teach them to be protective of their blackness, right? So this whole schooling experience, and we're going around, and then it's a double-edged sword, because at the same time that I have a responsibility for making sure that they are confident in being black, I also have a responsibility for setting them up educationally so that they can be successful in this very white world. That's just the reality of it. I have to do both of those things at the same time. And I think that is unique to our culture. I don't think that's something, maybe the Latin folks deal with it, Hispanic folks deal with it a little bit. But I think that is unique to our culture, where we, at the same time that we want to protect them and put them in all black environments, because this we know is going to be the way that they become confident in themselves, we also know that we got to put them in school environments where they get the best education, because the environments that where the blacks are going to school are underfunded, been left to die for decades, right? So it's a very tough spot to be a parent in that environment. But I just have got, like I said, the older I get, the blacker I get, the less I care. And truth be told, my goal is to educate all those white people as well about how great blackness has been to their community, right? And from the beginning of time, blackness has been an additive, a positive additive to their community. And the only reason is they weren't informed of as well. They drink the same Kool-Aid that we were drinking. So if the people that I have earned relationship with, the people that I've earned an audience with, y'all just gonna have to be comfortable with me being black as fuck from this point forward, because I ain't got no other choice. It is required for me to exist, is to be able to live in my skin as my skin is, with no kind of hindrances or just not being having to hold it back in any way.
Daryl, what's been your thoughts on that? As the resident blackest person I know, man, I know that this is probably me lighting a powder keg for you. what's been your thoughts in seeing that, and especially having to reconcile, you know, seeing a daughter that's really getting up.
Sanderson had a 7th birthday. Yeah, she just turned 7 on Wednesday.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, she's past kindergarten age. You know, I mean, she's starting to get to that point where those curriculums and those, you know, things that, you know,
we had a thing, though. She did a
social
thing.
Social studies is a real
thing. So we're doing it at home, though. So she's with me at home during the week for school. So, man, she did
it. So you got her listening to, like, Whitey's on the Moon. And
no, I make her listen to the song. Her middle name is Asada. I named her after Asada Shakur. So. So I make her listen to the song by Common, Song for Asada, like all the time. You know, like, this is where your name came from. And she, you know, she'll tell you where her name came from. Like, Asada Shakur, she's a political prisoner in Cuba, you know. But I don't think she understands it necessarily. She just knows where it comes from. But I wanted to beat her, you know, because I was upset if she ever wanted to, like, become, like, non-political, or, like she would try to become a Republican or, like, a Sambo. Like, they could always look up that her middle name is Asada. And then, like, it would always, like, be a spurn on her side of not being black. You know, so yeah. I just stop her from going to the dark side at all times.
Hey, that middle name, that's no joke, man, because that middle name will pop up on you. That's like when I saw Stephen Colbert, Stephen Colbert middle name was Tyrone. I was like, oh, that makes sense now. Yeah.
So, no, she was talking about, she was like drawing a world and talking about the, like, well, you know, the cops in the world, and I didn't stop her in the middle of her video. After the video, I was like, you know, we don't do that, though, right? And I had to break down to her our issues with the police and everything, you know. And she still doesn't get it, but I have to start with it. I don't want her loving no police like that. Like, I don't – at the same time, I don't want you, you know, disliking them either, but I want you to know that it ain't all good.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, Daryl, because the mother of my children has a profound relationship with the Dallas Police Department here, because she worked with the Visiting Nurses Association and Meals on Wheels. So they were always in there delivering meals, doing good things, right? So the way she teaches, because she hasn't had the put your face on the hood of a hot car experience, mm-hmm. because she has never been set on the curb for no reason whatsoever, other than just to have been fucked with. And excuse my language, I don't know if we, this is a,
no, you're fine, you're fine. This is NC-17.
Good. So,
that is
I got a lot more F-bombs.
That's the 845th worst thing ever said on this podcast.
Oh, okay, well, then, I'm trying to add, let me add to that list then. But, so she's never had that experience. And that's not to discredit black women, because I wholeheartedly believe there's nothing on this planet that's treated worse than a black woman.
100%.
Because you have all of the ills of being black, and sexism has been around as long as, if not longer than racism, right? So we created racism, but we've been doing the sexism stuff since Adam and Eve, or whatever you believe. So it's funny because especially in the beginning, you know, my son was enamored with cops, you know. I got to go get these stickers. He got these shield stickers. I got to get these stickers, right?
The Derek Hards, when they was trying to create snitches in the hood.
Right. Which is also a setup, bro. So she's teaching me that, but now I'm going through this thing, like, do I wait to teach my kids? And Daryl, you were just speaking about this. Do you wait to teach them when they understand? Or do you just start teaching them as early as possible? And the funny thing is, about anything else in life, except for race and racism, we do not delay educating them about anything else, right? We want to teach them about economics as early as possible. We give kids checking accounts at 2. They got their own bank card at 5. You know, we teach them about economics as early as possible. We save the conversation for racism because we're so uncomfortable about it until something actually happens.
It's reactionary education and not proactive education.
Exactly. And I remember, I tell this story all the time. I remember going to a funeral in Atlanta for one of my relatives. I was really, really young. I was having a horrible day, as most young kids do. They just, you know, they're sick, so their emotional maturity is crazy. So my dad makes me go say hi to this man. He's like, you need to go up to him and you say thank you and for everything you've done. I was like, bro ain't gave me man candy, bro. I don't know nothing about this cat. Why am I going up to him and saying thank you? Well, that man was Ralph Abernathy.
Oh, wow. Snap.
Right? So when you say, when is the time? I don't know, but well, 3 years later, my dad made us watch all of the Eyes on the Prize, and then Ralph Abernathy came up, and I was like, oh, I met that guy. And now, the more I learned about my history, I was like, oh my gosh, no wonder he was introducing this to me. So the start of my education your education about who you are starts way before you understand it, right? But I got some pushback. I recently posted a video of me having the talk with my son and my nephew. And I flat out got calls like, don't you think it's too early to talk to your kid about this? And I'm like, of course, my first thought is, I don't know. How young was Tamir, right? I don't know. You know, how young was Trayvon? Was it too early? Like, if I had a head start, where else would you apply that same standard? Now, you're not going to teach your kids about safe sex until like 14 minutes before they have sex? Like, what are you talking about? Like, that whole idea, but that shows how uncomfortable we are with the conversation of race and racism. And even us as Black people who are subject to it the worst, we're uncomfortable talking to our children about it. Mm-hmm. And that can no longer be the case. So maybe we should reframe it. Not they don't like Black people, but being Black is, you know, everything they do is Black as fuck. From swimming is Black as fuck. From video games to going out of space is Black as fuck. To everything that you can possibly imagine, because we have been here since the beginning of time, it only makes sense that we being Black as fuck is a very cool thing. Oh, that's my bat phone. That's my mom. She gonna have to wait. I'm paying that phone bill so I can do what I can hang up on it if I want to. I can also get my ass kicked at 43. So.
And that never goes out. That's one thing that don't ever go out of style. I think that Versus yesterday showed that Black Lady swag don't ever go out of style.
Yo, Bob, you getting your ass whooped is still Black as fuck. It doesn't matter. It's going to be
100%. Until the day you die.
Right.
I found that I traded in one mother for another one. The only problem is that I'm marrying one, and I was just born to the other. But the habits and the tendencies for dealing with my Black maleness are very similar.
I'm still going to have to pick up these socks, no matter what.
Right. Oh, man, exactly that. I had a whole thing about socks. Socks caused almost a two-day war about 3 months ago. So the thing I'll say, man, is that I love what happens with that concept, and I think that it's very clear that we have to put it in front of our children. But I also think it's very important to put that in front of us, the adults, people that are framing the direction, the things that people are doing. I'll ask you, man, what do you think that in the last, let's just say the last 7 months in particular, which have been focused in a completely different way than I think that any other time in my life was or probably will be at this point. What would you say has been the thing that has really been the what's the best way to put this? I would say the thing that's really been the what's focused Black people on their Blackness this year. And then not necessarily to say, you know, police violence or college or anything like that, you know, but just like, what's caused this, what it seemed like an awakening in that Blackness for this year?
I'm going to tell you, and I think we got to give credit where credit is due. And I think that I think it's more than the last 7 months. I think it's the last 4 years. And I think Cap has probably been one of the most instrumental figures of this time in terms of us being more confident about our Blackness and doing it in a way that we are even willing to lose something in order to be regular in this world, right? As much as you want to talk about Cap and his ideas or what he may think, he was willing to put it on the line, right? Some of us have make less than $100,000 a year. We ain't never going to put it on the line. Never going to put it on the line for the right thing, right? And so I think that's one of the – that's and he was nothing but a reinvigoration of what had already happened prior to him, right? He had just taken the torch and kept running with it. But I think he became so unapologetic about it in a way that it made us all say, you know what, why ain't I okay with wearing my hoodie to work? It's just a shirt. And so I remember wearing a hoodie to AT&T one day. I decided, I love hoodies. I'm going to wear my hoodie to work today. And it was amazing the people who came up and said to me about it, because they did. They looked just like I did. Mm. It wasn't the white folks who looked at it. It was the Black folks who said, what are you doing? What are you doing? Are you willing to risk it all? And I'm like, it's a hoodie. It's literally a hoodie. So why are we so ashamed? I don't want to say it's shame. I don't think Black people are ashamed of being Black. I think this country has taught Black people for a very long time that you either water down your Blackness or you let your Blackness be a threat to your existence as a whole.
But I also think we water it down, but we'll turn it up within ourselves. I'm only going to be Black amongst this with Black people. I'm never going to be Black outside of that. I stopped code switching in 2009. I tell people all the time, I stopped code switching like 2009. And it went it's not like I'm going like, yo, what's up, my G? Not that, but I'm going to still do me. I ain't changing my voice on no interviews, no nothing. It's going to be, this is what it is.
And the crazy thing about it is that when you talk about the depths to which that happens, there's times where the depths of that happens even before, in some cases, when we're deciding how our children are going to present themselves to the world. Naming your children certain things so that they get a fair opportunity and get an opportunity for their resumes to be seen when they're in a system. That name is going to be somewhat, undecipherable. We're going to know about that, when you're, I think that all of us going to the institutions that we did for college, we got there and realized really quickly that there were two different worlds. I can recall when I got there, it was just like it flipped my world upside down, because I was coming from a all Black neighborhood at a predominantly Black high school, but one a school district in St. Louis that got gradually Blacker as time went along, because the people that were part of it were leaving it. So I see all of this segregation and these things that are happening for years, and then I get to a college like Mizzou, and it's like, whoa.
And you meet Brad Pitt from Sedalia.
But the thing about it is that I look out and I see that, and there's nowhere else to see. But here's what stands out, though. I look at it, and I see the Black people. I see all the Black people. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's where I'm like, all right, that's where I know that kind of that home base is at. And that's the experience that I think a lot of people don't get. The majority certainly doesn't get, because if you spend your whole life within a comfort zone that is your natural habitat, wherever you're at, you're not going to go over there except for the fact when you need to go over and get something that you like music or fashion or God forbid, I want to root for an athlete, but I don't want to recognize the fact that he's deciding that he's not going to step out of his comfort zone while still being that athlete that I want to deal with. People are having a hard time reconciling all those things, and also the fact that people are calling them on.
Yeah, and that's the same on the same lines of Cap. Is like Cap coming out of Nevada and being this phenomenal athlete and going to the Super Bowl and all this other stuff. When who wasn't big on Cap before he decided to take a knee, right? Everybody was a fan of Cap. Clean cut kid, truth be told, his skin tone is more acceptable.
He had the complexion for the protection board, didn't he? Like,
bro, he literally had the Barack Obama special. All right, You a nigga, but you a little bit less of a nigga than most
I'll take
other
you.
Niggas.
I'll take you.
Well, yeah, you know what? And let's call that. This is something I'm going to talk about on my new program starting later on this week. Let's look at the top three quarterbacks in the NFL right now, which is, first of all, a remarkable thing. Potentially the top five quarterbacks in the NFL are all black men right now.
And they have 10 total starting quarterbacks yesterday.
All-time record. But look at the top. Look at Pat Mahomes and look at Lamar Jackson. And this isn't an indictment on the blackness of either one of them, but there's a reason why you see one of them be in commercials.
Oh, absolutely.
In a wider fashion than the other.
Absolutely.
And there's no letdown between. One was the MVP of the year 2 years ago, and he was Super Bowl champion this year. The other one is a Heisman Trophy winner and the MVP of the league right before. And he's just getting his due. But then bringing a third person into this play in Russell Wilson, who can be seen even by us. And I bring this up because I want to turn this conversation another direction. By us as African-Americans as being that safe brother. Like, we talked about it on the show many times. We say, Russell Wilson's with Sierra. What the hell happened? Like, we was like, where'd that come from? Russell turned his whole swag around.
That might be the DeLorean right there. That might be the thing that got Trump in office. Like, that might be, like, the DeLorean, the one that sent us off track. It's like somebody went, like, Russell Wilson went back in time to his son's like, hey, man, you need to holler at that girl. And it messed up the whole time continuum, man.
So Russell Wilson's Marty McFly.
Yes, he went back in his 80s, and he was with some old fae, you know, sitting there and not happy. And he was like, you need to go back. And that girl that somebody tried to set you up when you was like, no, I think I'm going to stay in this route. You need to go back, and that's what happened, man. That's
I wish somebody would go back and get me from like 1997, right. but the reason why I bring that up is when I talk about being black as fuck, I want to talk about also what it means for us to be black as fuck on all different frames of what that means as black people. Because a lot of the times, what I've seen in this year, and the reason why I asked that question about what I've seen this year, I see way too much infighting about what that means between us two. And there's a lot of room for you to be black as you want to be, black as you need to be, and come from a different angle. But I think that one of the things that's detrimental is that what it means to be black as fuck gets put in way too much of a either or standpoint. And really, that's a kaleidoscope that looks like black people in general. One of the greatest things about being black, kaleidoscope of what blackness is as being an African American or even being black on a global level. So I feel like our response to that has to also be a kaleidoscope of the different experiences of what it means to be black.
Absolutely. And it's funny because I just rolled down a thing because the structure of Black as Fuck is going to have a podcast component once you fellas teach me how to do this shit. There's going to be a podcast component, right? And it's basically my goal is to go out and reach out to people and tell and get deeper stories about stuff that even we don't necessarily understand. And colorism is black as fuck in our community. Mm-hmm. It's a very black thing, right? It truly affects how we view our mate choices, right? And skin tone has nothing to do with if you're going to be successful in your relationship or not. But we actually have preferences for skin tone in our community. Makes no sense, but we're products of our environment as well, right? Colorism affects how you dress, right? I mean, literally the clothes that you put on is affected by colorism. You know, your skin, let's see, you can't wear that color. The color don't look good on your skin. What? What do you mean this color doesn't look good on my skin? By whose freaking standard was that established that taupe won't look good on a dark-skinned black man? Like, this doesn't make any sense, right? But it's because we ingested everything that we were taught as well. It was a necessary thing to ingest those rules because those rules meant you were either going to be alive or dead. So we ingested those things as well, from the paper brown bag test to I know my grandmother was very, very, very fair-skinned. She's whiter than Matt. It's crazy.
That takes some effort.
Right. She almost clear. And so she used to tell me I wanted the darkest of husbands, right? The darkest of husbands. She's like, I wanted the juiciest of lips. I wanted the broadest of nose.
Malcolm X talks about his mother said the same thing.
because she was so ostracized by her own community because of her skin, right? She had to endure pain from her own community when she was truly saying, look at me, I'm black as fuck too, right? And so colorism is a black as fuck thing. And black as fuck is not about all the positives about our community, okay. Right? Okay. It will not be about all the positives about our community, because there are some things, some truths about our community that we have to really come to terms with. And I'm not saying come to terms in a way as until we fix this, white people or other people are not going to accept us. Fuck what they think. I could care less. I'm saying we should address this because it's going to be best for us. It's going to make our lives better. We should address this because having this idea that having sex early is black as fuck. It's super black as fuck.
Is it?
I feel like it is.
I don't know, man. That one, I went to school with a lot of people of other races. They was doing their thing too, man, early.
Like, no. But what age group were having sex early? Now, trust me, Derek Arnell was getting the most pussy in Parkway North. Derek, if you out there, Derek was the, like, this super attractive Brad Pitt cat in high school, right? And I remember going into, when I was playing basketball with the guys, I would go into the party, and the white folks would be making jokes about who's going to get head tonight at the party. I was like, first and foremost, as a representative of the black community, even if you're getting head, you're not supposed to tell the world that you're getting head. That's how black women get down. Like, yep. I'm going to suck your dick, but you don't tell nobody about it.
Yep.
Got it?
Yep.
Right?
It just became cool for black women to suck dick around, like, 2008.
Exactly. Right. And I'm like, how many years am I old? Anyway, that's another podcast. But they did that in high school, Daryl. We started teaching our kids. There's things like young fellas like, oh, you ain't had no pussy. I'm 9 years old, my nigga. Like, what are you talking about?
I see what you're saying. Okay.
That's what I mean by early. It's not that they don't trust me. I'd have been at all the high school parties where the most ratchet of ratchet was happening in Creve Coeur.
Mm-hmm.
Creve Coeur. Right? Not Blackjack. Creve Coeur. Right? Not Old Fallon Place. Creve Coeur. My best friend in high school was this cat, Mark Wright. I used to love staying in his house after the basketball games or the football games because I knew it's going to be ratchet recklessness going on, right?
I'll put it this way.
It was going to be sponsored by mom and dad. It was going to be like pizza there. It was going to be the liquor cabinet might be open.
It might be the lock might be off.
The lock might be getting repaired tonight, right? And so all this wild stuff was going on, but I think there is we have the disposition, especially amongst black males, that you got to start having sex way too early. So sexual activity is black as fuck, but how should we be, everything should we be doing better with it, right? And that's, I have a son and a daughter now. People ask me how I'm going to teach my daughter about sexual activity. Are you going to teach it different than my son? I was like, I'm not going to sit up here and act like I'm some, like,
Renaissance brother that is like, it's all good either way, right?
Bro, I have to fight every day to ignore the misogynistic, chauvinistic things that I've been taught over my life, because I don't want to impart them into my daughter, right? So she's 4 years old, and for the next, hopefully, 40 years before she has sex.
4 years.
Stupid idea. Right? I've been telling myself, I'm going to tell her one thing. Whatever you do it because you decided to and not because you were coerced into doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think that has to be the standard for all young people when it comes to sex in our community is do it because you felt like it was good for you, it was good for time, you did the research, you understood the risk and the rewards, but don't do it because somebody gave you a Nautica shirt the day at the prom. Like, come on, cuz, like, for real.
That's not the play, but I think that the thing that you highlighted right there is that, I'm gonna talk about this on two fronts, is that fatherhood and mentorship are Black as fuck. And those are the things that while, and this is the point that I'll make about this entire effort, and I'll bring it back to something I said earlier, is that right now we're at a point where a lot of people are saying that if you pull yourself out and make yourself be the ideal thing that we're talking about, there's something wrong with it, because it should matter for everybody. Everybody's thing should be said. And while I've said that I've got no problem with everybody looking out for themselves, what you're not gonna do is tell us that we can't individually look out for ourselves anymore when you've been specializing in it since the colonial days around here. So, you know, hey, maybe we're showing up to the party a little bit too late as a whole, but one thing that we do have the ability to do as a people is to reach out and really put our arms around ourselves. And I think that starts with the places that maybe we have lacked before. Motherhood is Black as fuck. It's just accepted as such. There's nothing that's more feared in the universe than a Black mother. My mother, yeah, can still look at me. Still look at me now, and I can feel that look. And there's
over a Zoom call, I would still get scared.
You'll get a lot. My mom's texted me two times while we've been doing this show. I'm gonna need to text her back in a second too. But it's you know, the thing about it is that that's just a foregone conclusion in the Black community. But what is not a foregone conclusion is how many things are Black as fuck about Black fatherhood. And that's one of those things that our generation has the opportunity, and I believe wholeheartedly, is stepping in and changing how that happened in comparison to the generation before. Because I think that our generation was the one that had so many people that suffered from not having Black fathers or Black mentors or Black leaders or Black male examples in their life, that I see more people that are more determined to turn that around, whether that's directly through fatherhood and leadership, or whether that's through being an example that I'm going to go to college because these young brothers need to see that I'm going to do it, or I'm going to get this job in a place where we're not at, so the brothers can see that, these young brothers can see that I can do it, and then reach back and give that back. That's something that's Black as fuck, and I think that that's something that is uniquely important in our generation too, both for driving us forward, but also to right some of the wrongs and some of those nomenclatures that got put in place about us that just fat ass aren't true.
And the narrative is super important. I have caused many a dust up in the Black barbershop because I go in there well informed about the fact. The truth is, Black father, there's no better participant in a child's life than a Black father. Mm-hmm. All the research says. Now, the criteria that we judge it off of is marriage rates, right? So we say Black fathers aren't present because they're not married to the mother of the child, right? But then we also understand that there's a lot of barriers to entry to actually becoming married, right? It's an industry. There's costs associated with it. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of things that are barriers to entry to becoming married. But when you start breaking
this, I say this too to jump on that point, and then you can take it home? I also would say that I know this from my own experience, that marriage is also a learned behavior. And if you didn't grow up around it, it's something you have to really, truly learn how to not only embrace and pull off, but you also have to learn how to just what it looks like and what it means on an everyday basis to be a part of that. It's hard, especially if you didn't grow up around it. And I'm a person that came from a household where my father was involved in my life, but he didn't live in my house with me. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, those are variables that we have at a disproportionate rate.
And that's kind of how parenting is broke. All right, so we this is how America does things a lot. They set a standard criteria, and once you don't meet that criteria, they put all of the blame and onus on you, right? Mm-hmm. So marriage is the criteria, right? And because we don't meet that criteria, they say you can't be a good father because you're not married. Well, when you start breaking down the day-to-day activities of what being a good father is, Black fathers are present at bedtime more than any other race out there. Black fathers are helping with homework more than any other race out there. Black fathers are cooking more than any other race out there. Black fathers have the certain conversations than more than any other race out there. actually, the people who come up short in that is white fathers. Because even Latino and Asian fathers.
And on top of that, when you look at like white black women not maybe being with those fathers, black women just don't put up as much shit as white women do. I'm just going to say it, period. Like, there's a different level of accountability, period. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm gonna push back on you a little bit, Daryl, because black women put up a lot of dumb black.
They do, they do. Because the great Patrice O'Neill said, black women are hard on the front end, but great on the back end. You know, like they go right. He's like he hit me with the end of the club, but he been with me 10 years, girl. Like you know,
yeah.
But
they go right
on the front end, though. That's what I'm saying. Like you gonna have to go through some shit to get your lady in general.
But also the thing is, and we chiefs romanticize ideas of marriage and relationships anyway. And I don't think the white community teaches it like that. They still have arranged marriages.
Oh, you're saying even within groups, group deranged almost, where it's like you need to be kicking it with these people. So therefore, it is a group. It is an arranged marriage.
One of the most beautiful things I've been doing, I didn't get to do it this year, of course, and I didn't do it last because I was just going through some life changes. But we started going to Martha's Vineyard during Black Month, August.
Okay, right? Yeah. The Inkwell was, that's the Inkwell. People don't know the movie, the Inkwell. Martha's Vineyard, yeah.
So I go up there and, you know, no matter what I sound like, no matter everything that I've seen, I'm still... grew up 3 blocks east of Page and Kings Highway, right? So I'm rejecting all of this lobster bisque bullshit. I'm rejecting it all, right? And I get up there, get off this little private plane that drops us off in Martha's Vineyard, and everything looks amazing. The sun is shining. There's lobsters chilling out on the beach. It's all crazy kind of shit going on. And I'm just like, I don't believe I'm here. The homies would be so upset. Like, it would be so bothersome. And then I saw all this black greatness going on. I remember the Inkwell story. And I had a conversation with this sister that says, we come here every year because we are always trying to keep the circle of people that our children are going to be interacting with vibrant and full of possibility, right? And she's like, these are some of the finest black people out there. And I ain't talking about looks. I ain't talking about money. I'm just talking about quality of people. They really good people, but they black as fuck. They black as fuck, right? Martha Vineyard get turned out for that whole month, right? There's comedy shows at Martha's Vineyard during that week.
Wow.
During that time, there's all kind of live parties. BMW sponsors one of the uptown, and BMW sponsors one of the best parties out there, right? You got beach parties going out, all the Greeks out there. So everything contrary to what you think was going on at the Inkwell, right? Because we see it from the movie that this one kid was the sore on the beach, right? That he was the outlier and all these other people, highbrow black people. Those people are gathering there with one purpose, to keep growing their network within that network. So she was like, I promise you, my son is going to marry somebody from this network.
But that's the thing, though. We have, I mean, and I guess that's a class issue, our class, maybe distinction within us, that we give people chances amongst whoever you are. We kind of take you whoever you are, regardless of race, whatever it is. Like, you cool. It doesn't
matter. Other communities don't do that.
I don't think it feels the same way with other cultures as much.
They do not do that. They protect their, and for good reason, they protect their their lineage. Look, I am not opposed to white people fighting to maintain whiteness, right? I just think they do it a horrible, like, if you're going to really be a white supremacist, you cannot like Ciara. You cannot like Megan Thee Stallion. You cannot like all these people, even Tiana Trump, anybody. You can't. You got to stay with Susie, right? If you're really committed to your whiteness, you can't be going over there dipping in the black honeypot. You just can't. Right. So because being committed to your whiteness is really sound. Like, Daryl, are you committed to your family?
Yeah.
Like, is there nothing that you would do to make sure that your family didn't exist?
Of course. I'm always gonna make sure my family's good.
So it's normal that white people are acting the way that they are right now, because they feel like they're about to be an extinct goddamn animal. And the only thing that's going to keep them, make them extinct is they keep fucking having sex with other people who aren't white. Right? So if you're really a racist, this is how you really find out if it's a racist or not. You get a fine black woman to go into the KKK meeting. And see how many of them take their head, their hoods off to actually see what they're looking at. They be like, wait, hold on, right? And you know you ain't got no real racists in the room, right? There ain't no racists in there. You guys are all charlatans. You are liars. Because you saw that thing just like I saw that thing, and you didn't care if it was black, blue, or green, right? But it's a normal thing for black people, for white people to try to prolong their existence. It just so happens that the way you're going about doing it conflicts with my existence, and that's, I'm too black as fuck for that.
I think that's the perfect spot to end that at, man. So Rob, man, before we get out of here, bro, I want to just, you know, let people know about the vision, let people know where they can find out about things, what's coming up, you know, just whatever we could do to keep the message moving.
So my goal is the first black podcast in a month from this day. Today is actually my dad's birthday. Shout out to daddy, would have been 70 years old. Being healthy is black as fuck. And that's probably going to be the first podcast because my dad died at, early of diabetes, and he shouldn't have. I should have a 70-year-old dad who is helping me navigate what it is to be a 40-year-old black man. And so my first one is going to be about health, and I'm going to bring in some folks. But I need to know what people don't know about because I'm trying to fill my own gap. So if people can go to www.blackasfuck.com, BLKASFCK.com, or look us up on social media at blackasfuck.com, BOTCOM, on all the channels, and share with me what you feel like we need to be talking about in our communities. I want this to be a collective effort. I know I'm going down this experience in order to learn about it. I want people to go out and buy the T-shirt, blackasfuck.com, to get a T-shirt. And then be proud of it and use it as a shield, right? Use it as a shield and a sword. Because a lot of times when we're code switching, and I'm glad to hear you gave up code switching back in 2009, Daryl. A lot of times when we're code switching, we give people this false sense of security. Maybe you need to put your sport coat on over your shirt. And so they only just see the inside of the letters. And when somebody's in the break room, about to tell some ridiculous joke about black folks, you just open that bitch up and remind them. I'm black as fuck too.
So unless you want to be you reach for a cup. And yeah. Then this happens to like, up in a little bit.
Oh, it is hot in here, right? Just so we can warn folks that, hey man, don't think just because I'm in this office with you that I'm not proud of being a black person. Don't think that just because I'm going to the game with you then I'm not proud of being a black person. And that's really what I want to drive home is that being black as fuck is good enough. It doesn't have to be exceptional. It doesn't have to be LeBron James. It can be very regular and still be good as fuck. So that's where I'm at.
All right, bro.
Last man, no matter. He's got to go his cruise, man. Break it down. This is the last thing. He's got to name his cruise.
Yeah. So let me give you the concept here, man. This is a little bonus. We're gonna do a little bonus content here real quick.
Okay.
So many years ago when we was getting this thing off the ground, an idea came to us upon the cloud, like Mario 2. It literally did. Yeah, we might have drank that cloud down to our
yeah. Right.
So what we did, man, is that we came together with the concept of who's in your crew, right? And like, so every crew though has a role in it, and it has people that fill different roles. So Daryl, put them on about the roles, about what that looks like.
All right.
And you got to figure out who you are in this crew as well.
Do you want to give him, so we're doing like a test where we do the first one, and then Matt, you give an example of somebody who that is in your crew, but we won't give him the rest of anything else to fill in. It's like, you know, you can take the Scantron as a kid, like this is what the
example.
So we're going to do the first one, superstar.
I'm going to do people from our chapters so you can get the feel of what I'm talking about. I'm going to use the chapter.
Okay. Superstar is the lead person in the crew. He doesn't care as much, but you use him to facilitate everything else for the crew. but he's the most attractive dude, or he's the most kind of swag dude, but he doesn't care as much. He doesn't maybe have the negotiation skills or other different things that are intangibles, but he's the guy that's like, okay, if we gonna go out here front, we need Method Man. We need Method Man to come out with his album first. And if Method Man album has to come out first, though, everybody else is, whatever you want to say, Method Man album comes out of the Wu.
Actually, I'm just going to use your line. This is great. There's enough of y'all.
I was just like, you talking about Kobe Rozier.
I'm talking about David Blair.
Oh,
about any of these things, I'm just talking about.
He's writing it down, too. Look at him. He's writing it down.
He's out front. He doesn't care. He's going to do whatever he wants to do. And at the end of the night, it doesn't really matter.
So it's funny. I would say Kobe is more that person than even David is. David just put on a better show.
That's good. Because you're going to bring this back around, and I want you to use your Chicago crew to fill in these roles.
Rob, I'll give you mine. Adrian was ours. Was our superstar. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I can see that.
And then now the other aspect, the superstar. Two superstars can't exist in the same scenario. Like when we were at Doug's house.
All right, get bet. So Rob, so like for my crew, the person that sits in that role for my crew is BG.
But
BG and Kobe are really cool, but it's still
BG weird. And superstar. What else we got?
So BG and Adrian got in the same room at one point. They had to split the party up. Because you can't have them too close to each other because they are two superstars.
It's like it'll combust. It'll blow up. It'll literally start a fire.
He got to stay in the Eastern Conference. He got to stay in the Western Conference.
It's like we came up with the same conference. Somebody got to perform another night. So the next role. The next role is what's the next?
The negotiator. Negotiator.
Yeah, the negotiator. So the negotiator is actually. I'm gonna give you the definition of what it is, as opposed to people. Because people will be like, hold on, dog, that ain't...
No, you already gave him a Scantron example. That's it. Everything else, you can't give him no example.
So the negotiator... So the negotiator is the person that is... That's the silver tongue. That's the person that's stepping up. They know a bunch of people out there. They're going to be the one that's going to represent the crew, be able to probably talk yourself into some things, get people out of there. So the next role is the negotiator. And the next role after that is the utility man. Now, the utility man can step up and kind of be a little bit of everything. You know, whatever you need, the crew needs at that particular moment, he can kind of step in and be that. You know what I'm saying? It can be the most valuable piece you've got for holding the crew together is that utility.
Yeah.
The next role is the henchman.
No. Let's take a step back. Let's take a step back.
Hold on. We got it out there now. We got to finish the henchman.
Okay.
Because there's no sequence to it, really, of order.
No, it's not at all.
So the henchman is the next person. So I would just, you know what that brings. That's goon activities. Like every crew got to have somebody to fall back on. That if it's if things break down, this is the leader of the pack.
Right.
What's next, B? What you have?
Oh, yeah, but I want to step back. Now the negotiator may think he's a superstar as well. There is a very small amount of friction between negotiators sometimes and the superstar. The utility man understands his place. Like, okay, I know where I know my position. The negotiator, I think he's a superstar.
All right. So those are the four?
No, there's a couple more. No.
We got the wheel man / chaplain. He's the moral compass of the group.
The moral compass. I don't even know nobody.
Yes, you do.
Moral compass.
Oh, like he's the one like, man, we kind of wild.
Oh, I do know.
We kind of wild.
You're talking about the wheel man.
Yeah, the wheel man. That's what we kind of the chaplain / wheel man. Like we kind of wilding right now, y'all. We need to, you know what I'm saying? We need to fall back. Then we got happy to be here.
Then the next one is the happy to be here. It's like, damn, he's gonna keep showing up, huh? Well, if he gonna show up, have him bring the best liquor.
And he's gonna ride too though. He's an assistant henchman as well. So it's
he's
like
gonna do whatever. He's gonna do whatever. He's almost like a Secret Service agent. He's going to throw his body in front of the fray, like if he got to, because he's happy to be here and he won't stick around.
That's hilarious. So, all right, I got this. I'm going to start from the bottom up. I'm going to tell you, not the bottom up, but from the last one y'all told me about. My happy to be here, and it's funny because I've been in Dallas for 10 years now. So I have two crews, right? I got my Chicago family and my new guys, But I'll keep it to the guys that got most. So happy to be here is Mike B. Mike B is happy to be here. Mike B is, all right, you need to go get some cups from around the block. I go get it. You know, he's the guy who's just, he's very opinionated, but he's never going to let his opinions affect the outcome of the group as a whole. Like, it's not going to.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Things off, right? He said, hey, man, I'm here. Y'all want pizza? Let's go. I'll go around the block, give me a hot dog, and come back and eat pizza with y'all. He's that kind of dude, right? He just happened to be
here. I'm in, but I'm not going to. It's whatever.
Yeah. Hey, I just ain't going to cause a whole lot of ripples. Right. The moral compass is probably Sacramento. Now, there's two Sacramentos. Right?
Hold on. How do you got two Sacramentos?
There's Sacramento, and there's El Diablo. Those are two different people. And that's all I'm going to say about that to protect the innocent. But when Sacramento's present, he is the moral compass. He's the one who's going to say, man, look, man, maybe there's another way.
Sac is one of the most measured. I check his blood pressure because I just want to make sure he's still there, cats. I've never met in my life.
But if El Diablo come out.
So it's like in Suicide Squad where that dude was going. Like...
He could. He good, but once you turn that switch,
that's that Bruce Banner.
Exactly right. Somebody gonna lay this dude down. All right, the henchman.
Now that could be multiple henchmen. Now there's not one. It's like having soldiers in a mafia. There's multiple soldiers. There's not
right. But I would say the henchman for my time in Chicago was Leon Essex. Leon was a good brother of mine. He's actually more my family than anything, but Leon, he's from St. Louis as well. And Leon was just, I remember going to play basketball with Leon one day. We was going to the gym, it was late at night, I'm driving in my car. I got my little Audi A6, like I done made it, you know, and some kid in Englewood, Chicago, we're driving through Englewood and some kid throws a rock at the car, right? And the car hits the little, you know, that little silver trim on the door, hits a little trim. And before the rock can bounce off the car, Leon had jumped out the car in the middle of Englewood, Chicago, and starts running this cat down. Now, if you're not familiar with Englewood, Chicago, jumping out the car in Englewood, Chicago is like jumping out the Peabody's, into the Peabody's back in the day in St. Louis. Like, you don't run into the Peabody's trying to start some
That's a skydive right there without a parachute.
Right. Dallas people send you in Dallas, Oak Cliff. That's like running
through Oak Cliff. It's Oak Cliff. No, Oak Cliff then got a little gentrified.
Right, that's the old Oak Cliff.
Old Oak Cliff, right. Like, Keys Park kind of place down there. So, Leon was a dude who would get out, run out, take on everybody by himself, and be laughing about the entire time. I'm a skipper where I think I fall into this group.
Rob, I'm gonna put forth two other great henchmen who have crossed, three other great henchmen who have crossed the path in your life.
There's multiple henchmen.
I'm gonna put Big Joe out there. I'm gonna put Juan out there, and I'm gonna put your line brother AC out there as tremendous, tremendous henchmen.
Let me argue about that a little bit, man. Because I think all those guys will be pushed into henchmen. They have to be pushed into being a henchman. I think a henchman, a true henchman, just rises to the occasion. You ain't got to ask him to be a henchman.
So you're defining henchmen as like Wilson.
Yes. I'm just going to do this. I'm not going to wait for no permission. Juan, I got to convince him, like, we got to go kill these niggas. Leon's going to come back and be like, I killed them niggas.
I got you. There's a difference between your henchmen. There's a difference between your henchmen and your bodyguard crew.
Yes, right. And then I think Jeff is definitely the superstar. Jeff, who doesn't know Jeff? What arenas can he not politic in? It's funny to see him growing the way he is because those things, like most grown men who are growing. The things that were super important to him back in the day are less important to him now, and I think he's happy because of it. So shout out to Jeff. He's actually doing some amazing art as well. So he needs a shout out for that.
Yeah, where did that come from? I think Kobe is musician. He just pulled like a talent out of his numerous sleeves.
Bro, that dude is so multifaceted. It's ridiculous. It's kind of like he's one of those cats, and I kind of think of myself like this, that it's you have to learn how to focus because you can be very good at a whole lot of things. And the problem is when you're very good at a whole lot of things,
you're a master of none of them.
So now you become 80%, 70%. And so everybody's looking at you like you're a C student, when the truth is you're a C student across everything out there and probably an A-plus student in most of those things. So Jeff is a superstar. Kobe is a negotiator. He's a negotiator, right? And I feel like I'm the utility man. Because I can be the utility man. I could be the guy who goes and locks down the deal for the night spot by talking to the folks. And I'm also the guy who will set that joker off if you say something wrong to me in the right way.
I co-sign that. That's you're one of the models when I thought about utility man, because I popped up as utility man for my crew. And I've had to admittedly grow into being a utility man because my natural inclination goes more towards henchmen. I feel more like utility man is where I get in. So
if you look at like a mafia wise, really the negotiator is really the consigliere, which sits, if anybody knows about how the mafia is set up, he really kind of sits outside of the normal mafia structure between your boss, your underboss, you know, your capos and lieutenants. That's kind of goes straight down. Consigliere, he's over here. He kind of is his own thing. Like, but he can jump in and be like, yo, y'all fucking
Tom
up here.
Tom Hagen went from being the counselor to being the Don when Michael Corleone had to go to Cuba.
Yeah. And I think the utilities man is a fun spot to be in because
also underappreciated is a lot of times too.
Yeah, I'm always down with that, Daryl. More appreciation. I need more of that. So but it's interesting as you coming out. That's funny. I first brought this up. I had this thing that I always say, "Who's my Rat Pack?" Right, and I'm gonna shout this out because of my dad's birthday. But I've always had who is your Rat Pack? And my Rat Pack has always been my Uncle Ralph, who's my second father, my dad, of course, Marvin Gaye, and me. I feel like this would be an outstanding Rat Pack. And if you ever meet these folks, you understand why.
But Marvin Gaye has to be your henchman. Like there's no way. Like, I don't know the other people in this scenario, but Marvin Gaye is automatically your henchman.
No, my dad definitely the henchman.
The way Marvin Gaye got down, if your dad is the henchman, Lord help
me. Well, you need to see how big Rob's dad was and how big his brother is.
Yeah. Okay.
Rob is by far the smallest.
I am the run. I tell people that all the time. They be like, "Man, you 6 feet 220." I'm like, "Bro, I'm small. I'm very small in my family. You know, I got nephews who are 7 feet 300 pounds." Damn. And so my dad would definitely be the henchman. I think my Uncle Ralph is the negotiator. I'm still the utility man in that Rat Pack. There's going to be some panties on stage by the end of the experience. It's all over. Brothers, I've enjoyed this, man. I'm glad y'all had me out. I appreciate this. This
man,
has been awesome.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Absolutely, man. So, man, appreciate one more time, man. Appreciate you making the time out. We're going to definitely, support that. Let us know what we could do. Let us know, what's going on. We always tell people, put things on our clerk board, man. Let us know what to shout out with what we're doing. And we definitely support that. So,
keep it. And I would love to have you guys on and talk, because I was telling you that. I want to talk about specifically with Mad with Sports, about sports being black as fuck. But what I'm also trying to tell people is that there's deeper levels than just our influence in things, of how we influence things. And even as all of us are enamored by sports, but you understand sports from a different perspective and how our blackness has affected it. So we need to get y'all on there talking about that. It's unlimited, man, but we need to hear about it.
If you're talking about sports, I want you to get into soccer, man. It's black as fuck, more than you even think.
It's super black.
At some point, Matt needs to announce his team allegiance. At some point, people have emailed the soccer podcast asking when is Matt going to come on with his announcement.
I've answered that question already, but y'all won't accept
what is
my
your
answer.
Team? What is your team?
It is St. Louis City FC.
No, we're talking about in Europe, baby.
You don't accept my answer. That's the problem.
Yeah. This is fake soccer over here. This ain't real soccer over here. This is fake soccer.
Not. It's not at all. I'll figure it out one day. But, hey, Rob, appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, though, Rob.
And
man,
we definitely will be in touch, man, and we'll be connected.
All right, man. Stay up, brothers. I love y'all. Be cool.
Always, brother.